it's time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, crafts and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday I caught up with Anthony Yates, Auckland City's head of planning for the Hauraki Gulf Islands, and the opinionated islanders Alex Stone and Alex Knight, and our curator of comedy, Dougal. Now, many of you will be aware that recently there's been some changes proposed, in fact passed, which to the RMA, the Resource Management Act, which will allow some changes in some areas around what you can do with trees on your property. And there's a fair degree of misunderstanding around that. So to clear that up, I've got Anthony Yates, who's the planning team leader for the Hauraki Gulf Islands, here in the studio with me. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning.
So you can almost smell the petrol and hear the chainsaws revving, can't you, with the excitement and enthusiasm of some people to denude their property of vegetation?
Yes, I have to laugh. We were talking about it yesterday in the office. I was over in town, and evidently for the last 2 months you haven't been able to book a chainsaw in the city from anywhere for this weekend, which is going to lead a lot of people, even in the city, to get in a lot of trouble, unfortunately.
So these changes that are proposed, and we'll talk about the specifics for the island in a moment, but when do they come into effect?
Well, there's in terms of the tree rules, there's two rules. There's one that comes into effect, and this we're, and I'll leave Waiheke aside, this is the city, so at the moment, is that the only thing that people can do now in the city is to, they could trim trees that were previously protected, and there's the government didn't define trimming, but most councils have got together and said, well, look, that's, you know, 20% of a canopy of a tree. You go a little bit higher if you've got an arborist involved, but that's what people are allowed to do at the present time. The getting rid of the tree rules and allowing people to just wholesale take out trees actually doesn't take effect until October 1st, 2012. And that's the government's just given councils time to update their district plans and so forth so that they can get rid of their general protection tree rules and just look at trees on an individual basis and say, well, that's important to the community or that's not important. And it might be the likes of, you know, all the pūtakawas down Tamaki Drive or something like that. So people can't take out trees until at least, certainly in Auckland City, until 2012, when those rules will change.
I suppose the difficulty, isn't it, is that people almost feel like they've been given license to do this, and the only recourse for the council is going to be through the courts, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And it'll be interesting how the courts view that. I mean, they've been pretty tough. We've had a case recently on the island that was, it was quite surprising, actually. It was a Norfolk pine, or one or two Norfolk pines, quite large trees, and the fines they were talking about were $25,000 as a starting point, which is a, yeah, well, for me, that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
I think for most people. So, yeah, the courts have taken it seriously in the past, so it'll be interesting to see how they view it now.
Yeah, given that there's the change coming ahead anyway, and I suppose if governments signal that intent, that the courts may become more lenient on it.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to say.
And it must be a hard way to make regulation and develop understanding if you're having to do it through that litigious process as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't answer for what they're doing in town. I know they've got a lot of incident officers running around this weekend. They're all getting overtime, I think, to sort of make people aware. Because once again, council doesn't want to go down that litigation stage. We'd rather just make people aware and educate people rather than sort of do it with a crack of a whip.
And is there a budget and process for education around this stuff?
Well, certainly our comms team, we have a marketing team, believe it or not.
Yeah, I believe it.
And they've been using, you know, the Herald, there's been advertisements in the Herald, there's, the city scene, there's certainly a lot of, they've certainly tried to get it out there that things aren't changing. And I'm sure, I haven't been exposed to other councils around, but I'm sure they're doing the same as well.
Mm. Now, let's turn our attention to the Gulf Islands, which are our particular interest, of course. So what changes here?
Well, look, I won't talk about barrier because it's a little bit the rules are a little bit different out there. But effectively, there's no change to the current general tree protection rules on the island. So that means if you're on, if you live on Waiheke, that means that if you've got a native tree over 3 metres in height, it's protected. So you can't trim it, you can't remove it or work within its root zone without a resource consent from council. And that won't change by this Act. The reason why it won't change is that the rules that have come into force today by the government only dealt with the urban environment, and they defined the urban environment. And the key thing for Waiheke, which excluded it from those changes, so it's, i.e. it's not urban, is that it's not reticulated. The sites on Waiheke don't have access to reticulated sewage and stormwater. So effectively that means that there's just no change. We're not urban, the rules don't apply, the changes don't apply to us, so the status quo remains.
And yeah, there were a lot of people, weren't there, campaigning to protect the trees on Waiheke, and it seems they've got what they wanted, but perhaps not by the means that they thought.
No.
I think a lot of them were quite surprised to say, oh, hold on, it's all right.
Yeah, well, we actually, to be honest, we were as well. Yeah, we thought it was they were going to change the rules completely and it was going to affect the Gulf Island. So, yeah, my personal view, and this is only a personal view, I think it's a good thing, yeah, that it, that we can remain some control over the removal of trees. Yeah.
But there's certainly some eagerness to chop trees down, isn't there, amongst some parts of the community? And it's interesting when you look back at those photos of the island, you know, not that long ago, maybe even, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, and it was basically pasture.
That's right, yeah. Well, my family's had a batch in Palm Beach since the 20s. So sort of, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s here, that was exactly right. So, yeah, I've watched the change from, you know, basically farmland right through to now. And yeah, I think it could potentially have been a huge step backwards if it had been open slather on that. You know.
Now, I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this or not, but of course we've got the super city ahead, and each of the councils has its own regulations around tree cutting. And are the rules that are applying on Waiheke, are they dramatically different from what applies in the other council areas at the moment? Do you know?
I can only answer for Auckland City, so in the isthmus. So currently now, and it even is still in place, even though this may change come 2012 when the rules drop out effectively. The rules are slightly different. You're allowed to, I think it's a native tree over 6 metres is protected, so everything under 6 metres can come out. And I think they have exotic tree controls of about 8 metres. So if you have an exotic tree, if it's under 8 metres, you can basically remove it without consent.
So what's the exotic rule currently on Waiheke? Because we've got 3 metres for natives.
The proposed plan came in 2006, and that actually gave protection for exotic trees. That has subsequently been amended so that there's now no exotic trees on the island are not generally protected.
Right.
However, just a word of warning, there are some big exotic trees around the Waiheke that are scheduled.
So that's where the Norfolk pine thing come in?
No, that was generally protected at the time that was taken out. No, that one itself. But I think there's some, you know, there's some, in some areas around there's the odd, you know, oak or elm or, you know, and I think there may be actually the odd Norfolk pine that's a substantial specimen that the community back in the day said, no, hey, look, that's a special tree. We want to retain that. It's giving a lot of amenity to the area, so we put a special scheduled protection on that. If people are in doubt, if they have a substantial or a large, you know, and these are large specimens, tree on their property, it's an exotic, they just have to ring our council, the duty planner, which is, I think it's 5938, so 372-5938, and they could tell you in 2 minutes whether it's protected or not. Yeah.
Do you feel that there's a changing attitude? Like, you know, times are changing and people are developing, I suppose, more extensive and expensive properties here, and we've seen some interesting things like, you know, the big clearance of that site down in Oneiroa Beach where, you know, it was taken right down to the clay. But do you see an increase in the number of people who are wanting to completely strip everything back and have full, I suppose, full authority or full say over what their what their property looks like, or is it pretty much the same as it's always been?
It's a hard one. I mean, people, especially with the price of coastal property just going nuts in the last 5 years. You know, most people, it's all about views, and people want to maximise the amenity for themselves. So I have actually seen in my time a change where, you know, a tree isn't, you know, people don't value them for, you know, they value the view over what a tree may provide to their site and the area. Though in saying that, you know, we've always said to people that they can develop their properties, but, you know, if it's a substantial tree and their only excuse is that they want to, you know, build in that part of the property to get a sea view or something like that, they're going to run afoul of council. And a lot of people don't see it, but there's a lot of negotiation behind the scenes where we're just saying no behind the scenes, and people then come back with amended proposals and try to work around it. That's the probably 90%. Sometimes we don't agree, but generally the process starts to bog down for the people. Then, you know, they're talking about notified consents and so forth. So, yeah.
So at the moment, the rules are keep your chainsaws in the garage. If someone, but there is of course this process where people can take to their trees if they get the appropriate consent. So
that's right.
I mean, what's involved with that? I mean, there's a lot of mythology that's going to cost you thousands of dollars and bog you down for years and years.
No, well, yeah, yes and no. There's currently Auckland City has, so, and on Waiheke we have a free tree consent process, and that's to give people the opportunity to take away trees that are effectively are a hazard to property, a hazard to people. So, you know, that might be a good example. It might be growing across a driveway or something like that. So a hazard to people or property, is very dangerous, is intermittently going to fall or so forth. So if you have an example like that, a tree like that, you can come into council and for nothing we can... we will process that consent and you could be able to remove it. Often we kind of say, well, look, you know, compromises may be had through that process to say, well, look, why don't you prune it a bit and then we'll see what it's like in another year or so, and then if it's still a problem, then get rid of it. And sometimes that can extend to getting light into places, or, you know, if trees are overhanging, guttering and all sorts of stuff like that. So that is available, and people can just come in and talk to one of the duty planners in our office, and we can give some free advice on that. Where it does cost money is that there is the principle, and I think all councils are the same, is that we don't pay for private development. So if you've got a tree to be removed that's part of a development, so i.e. you know, you're putting a driveway into your site, or you want to build, or you want to extend on your property, then it gets encompassed in a resource consent that you have to pay for. So that's probably the clear differences. We have one process is free. But it has to be a hazard, or it has to be a strong reason for that to go down that process.
Right. Well, thanks very much, Anthony. Thanks for clearing all of that up. If people want to find out more about that, I presume there's somewhere online where they can check out what all the regulations are?
Yes, the Auckland City website has good information. If you went into that, and I believe you go under plans, policies and reports and go to the Hauraki Gulf Islands district plan and then text, and that can lead you straight to the rules on trees, or as I say, just ring the duty planner or pop by the office. We've always got someone on to talk to people, and that, you know, if they wanted to phone in, that's that number 5938, and they can just talk to a planner who can give them a quick rundown of the rules, or even just go over their scenario and to see if there is a way around their problems.
Cheers, thanks for that. It's Anthony Yates, Planning Team Leader for the Hauraki Gulf Islands. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio. And it's the first Saturday of the month, so I'm joined in the studio by the opinionated Islanders, by Alan Knight and an out-of-breath Alex Stone.
And I've got an opinion too!
Alex forgot he was coming, but he's here now. So welcome along. Welcome, Alan.
Good morning.
Okay, so plenty on the plate this morning.
Absolutely, yeah. Lots to work with.
Okay,
you so set them up, we'll knock them down.
Yeah. We got good material on this island. That's one thing we never run out of, is good material to work with.
That's right. Well, let's start off with, shall we start off with Fashion Week?
Why not?
Well, yeah, well, that's not quite Waiheke Island, but it's Auckland and the best of Auckland's fringe, shall we say. What I thought it was so ironic was Fashion Week was supposed to celebrate New Zealand fashion, and the enduring memory is Ms. Pamela Anderson with not much fashion, if I remember.
Which, of course, brings us to the local connection, that she was over here and visited Stony Ridge and is now talking about buying a property on the island.
I think Stephen would like that.
What do you think? You're putting out the welcome mat, Pamela Anderson?
Well, let's start off by saying, I mean, yes, fine.
We could give her an audition at Little Palm Beach and see how that goes.
Oh, no. You know, it's lovely that celebrities do find the place as appealing as we find it. And there's a lot of celebrities, for example, Lenny Henry and Dawn French. Welcome back anytime. I mean, they're just fantastic people. Pamela Anderson, I'm not so excited about. The one thing, though, that I think everyone should bear in mind, particularly tradespeople and businesses who are, well, how should we put this, like the chap in the Borat film, making hand party over the idea that Pamela Anderson is going to buy property on the island, you might want to Google not just Pamela Anderson assets, but Pamela Anderson financial assets, because apparently she's in some strife back home in the States for stiffing a builder on a bill for some $700,000. Oh. Somebody hasn't paid it.
But then again, she could always find work on the island. We could have a new Baywatch series set on Onitangi Beach. You
yes,
know?
Onitangi Baywatch.
Yeah, I can see the old slow-mos running down the beach and all of that. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could start something. We could get something going.
Well, she certainly raised the temperature around the place, didn't she? There were some very excited people.
Yes, overexcited.
Well, I don't know if I was. I found it just ironic that, you know, all these earnest fashion designers did their best through the week and
were totally sidelined
by Pamela wearing.
Yes, by some.
What it appeared to be a piece of muslin.
Yeah, it wasn't fashion, I don't think. I'm not an expert on fashion. Just take a look at me. But it didn't look like fashion to me. Yeah, that's good. So is she really going to come and live here?
Well, that was what the rumor was.
Gosh. Oh, we do good rumors, though, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rumors. And she did have Stony Ridge shut off completely for her own exclusive use.
Yep.
Aha.
Which I always think.
Well, maybe Stony Ridge could now advertise that the spa pool has now been used by Pamela Anderson. So you could bathe yourself in the same limpid waters that once washed her out. You know, you can see.
Oh, please. I just had breakfast.
I don't really understand the appeal of going to a bar by myself.
No,
it must be a very strange existence to know that anywhere you go to has sort of been cleared of all other human life and sanitized by security companies.
Maybe
and so
she's
forth.
Got an entourage.
Oh, doubtless does.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but we could have provided some interesting local folk. Yeah, what if you and I were there, Alan? We could have interviewed her.
Yes, we could have.
We could have found out whether she's maybe she is a very intelligent woman. She knows how to market herself.
But then again, let's not forget, as far as I'm aware, she hasn't actually done anything recently apart from that very undignified appearance in the Borat movie.
Yeah.
We're talking about somebody who's famous, what, 15, 20 years ago?
Well, maybe we should put a rule on Waiheke that we take celebrities but not has-beens. Because we're getting a few, like we're getting the old ex-rugby coach and the ex-America's Cup bloke and now the ex.
Let's not be too hard on has-beens. As a has-been myself.
Oh, shit, yeah, and you're looking at one too. Okay, we could call Waiheke the Island of Has-beens. When I first arrived on Waiheke, a friend of mine was clipping tickets on the ferry, and she had a lovely name for the island. She called it the Island of Ugly People. So I suppose that's why I felt at home.
That's a bit rough.
I know, but that's what she called it. You know, she said we're all that well-groomed in those days. But this is 15 years ago.
That's probably fair criticism.
So maybe the new celebrities are going to up the tone of the joint.
Now, part of the appeal, of course, for these people who come to the island and thinking you're looking at property is that, well, it's a beautiful place. And part of that beauty is the bush and the trees. But there's many people, as I talked about with Anthony Yates from the council earlier this morning, revving their chainsaws, ready to get rid of them.
Yes, I must admit, I was one of those people. there's all kinds of trees on my property I'd like to rearrange.
Yeah. Judicious pruning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not that I'm not going to plant other trees. I just want them the way I want them.
Yeah.
But I must admit, my wife insists that everything has to be left alone.
Yeah.
So that even if a native tree actually grew up through the center of the house, we'd have to leave it alone.
That'd be quite interesting.
No, you can't touch that, she says. It's not a native.
I've got a native tree growing up through the floor of my ute. I wonder if that's going to have to stay. I mean, my ute, the inside of my ute looks like Fungus National Park, so the tree's quite happy.
And then again, we do get back to your lovely suggestion before that we deal with our wheelie bins by planting native trees in them, so that they are then considered off limits,
immovable as well. Yeah, yeah.
And what about you, Alex? Have you got some trees that you would give the chop if you had the chance?
No. I'm happy with trees. I like trees.
Yeah, I figured that would be the case.
Yeah, but I think it is true that a lot of gardens originally overplanted. People, when a garden is bare, they kind of throw a lot of stuff at it, and then when the trees grow up, I'm not an expert on gardening, but I would imagine that's a common thing with garden planning, that you have to plan for the space, and if you haven't planned for the space, maybe you need some clearing.
I think, though, there is a problem that, okay, there was a great deal of cutting down trees in the early days.
Clearing the section, they call it.
Yeah, everything
was part
of
dominion over nature. You had to make everything clear.
Well, yeah. I mean, but one of the problems you see is like in Coromandel, where what used to be a reasonable deep water port is now completely silted up because they cut all the trees down, so all the topsoil promptly fell into the sea and gummed the whole thing up. So, yes, that was over the top. It was a shame to clear that many trees. But what's happened, of course, is that we've gone completely in the opposite direction, got so hysterical about protecting trees that might be fine right now, but I'm sure there's going to come a point in 40 or 50 years' time when it will all have to stop because the trees will simply be too big. It's one thing to say, oh, look, isn't this wonderful, we've got a Pahutukawa tree in our driveway. And yes, right now it's only 6 foot tall and maybe only a foot around the trunk. When it's an enormous tree that you can't even get your car around, something's going to have to be done then.
Yeah, the revenge of the trees. A neighbour of ours has planted a Moreton Bay fig on the...
good idea.
On the pavement. So when this thing actually grows up, it could take over the whole road, you know, with those buttress roots and things. So that's
Mind not, you, they're not a native. So
yeah, that's not appropriate, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. But when you look at things like Pahutukawas, sure, they're lovely when they're small. We've got a couple planted in our garden, and they're very picturesque. But in 50 to 100 years' time, whoever owns the property then is going to have to sort them out somehow. And I think that's the point at which they'll go, oh, you know, our grandparents really did go a bit over the top with this.
Yeah. I think you've got to be just remember in, I don't know, deal with it case by case, individual things. Because I still mourn the loss of a beautiful, there was a 90-year-old oak tree in Tahi Road that was taken out about 12 years ago, and I still remember that tree. I mean, Tahi Road's not very pretty at the best of times, and its only saving grace was this beautiful oak tree, which was taken...
Again, not a native.
No, but it was a beautiful tree.
Mm.
And it was taken out because there was a hardware store there that claimed to want to expand, and they got the permission to chop this tree, and I think that was a great loss because there are not many trees in Tahi Road. Maybe that's your point. That road could do with trees, but the other road could do with a few less.
Mind you, Tahi Road does show all the signs of having had a big bushfire go through it at some point because the wattle trees growing very substantially there, and that only happens if you've had a big burn-off.
Hey, speaking of Tahi Road, there's a public health warning out. If you're going to pick up a railway sleeper at the
Onitangi.
No, Tahi Road. Yeah, that's an idea. You could help yourself. Now, there's a pile of railway sleepers to be had at the Timber World, but they've got this wonderful practical joke, natural trap hazard thing. There's a mud puddle that's knee-deep in front of the railway sleepers. So you step forward to pick up a railway sleeper. You pick up the sleeper in your arms, thereby adding 30 kilos to your weight. You step backwards into the puddle, and you're up to your knees in mud. It's actually quite a laugh. I think that the people at the shop, they've done it deliberately.
Good on them.
Yeah, and it worked for me. I laughed my way all the way.
Extremely amusing, so long as it's not you that it's happening.
No, it happened to me, and I laughed my way all the way to the payout. But other people might not.
No.
Now, we didn't talk about this one before, so I'm going to throw it at you, but it's just kind of come up. You know, these sleepers down at Onitangi, right along the beach there. Are you beach visitors?
Yes, very much so. Well, until the beach turned toxic, I used to take my dogs down there quite a lot, and it is getting very difficult to park your car down there.
Yeah. I think the fringe between a beach and the civilized world needs to be a kind of natural fringe. It needs to be like an unformed edge or whatever. But this idea of this line of sleepers in military precision, it's turning it into like a sort of parking mall, shopping mall. You know, it's becoming too much of a built environment. Just leave it, man. Leave it like it was.
If there is the budget to go and put great big railway sleepers down there, that budget could have been better used to restore the damage that happened to the dunes there last year when we had that big storm that came through and carved them all out again, which was a tragedy.
This railway sleepers thing is another case. No one asked us. No one told us. Like, did anyone know it was happening till it happened?
I think it's just another case of some department at Auckland City had a budget they had to get through. Oh, we've got to spend this money somehow. I know railway sleepers are only tangy. And yeah, you're right. No, we didn't want it. We didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
And when we complained, we weren't listened to. Well, maybe, same old story.
Maybe we could go and help ourselves. That's a good idea. Free railway sleepers.
Well, I don't think you'd be the first to think of it, actually. Now, you mentioned, Alan, taking your dog to the beach. And, of course, we had all the fuss earlier on around the poison penguins and the dolphins and the dog poisonings and so on. And local Sarah Silverstar gathered up. So that's kind of odd to start with, but gathered up some dead penguins and samples of
dog vomit.
Dog vomit,
and tested this. And of course, the results came out, and people were saying, "Aha! See, we were right." Because the poison, which I am not even going to try to pronounce, is it Brophyticum? There we go. I did try to pronounce it, which was dropped on Motutapu, and it came out and said, "Okay, the test results show that the penguins have got Brophyticum in them."
Yeah. However, if we read the marketplace this week, Miss Silverstar says that the clinic used an EAV, which stands for electroacupuncture according to vol machine, to detect toxins and allergies. Now, if you Google this, and you really ought to, jeez, what's the first thing that comes up? Quack watch. Yes.
Well, electric acupuncture sounds like something that would give you a bit of a buzz. Like, are these needles with current going through or something?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what's next? Etherically charged tofu to determine results. This is sheer quackery.
I reckon we could generate nuclear power from my toenails or something.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. The whole thing comes across like just another example of some po-faced greenie who takes themselves way too seriously going about this in an entirely unscientific manner. We're all concerned about the toxins, but certainly, whilst I'm not prepared to take the word of any government department on anything, I am certainly prepared to take the word of people like Andy Spence. And if you listen to him, and he is the park ranger here, he deals with these toxins all the time. And if you listen to him, he has a far more balanced view on this. Mm. And so I think what Ms. Silverstar is doing is absolute rubbish. She says at the end, "I knew there would be controversy, and I stand by the results. The environment is highly sensitive, and it doesn't take a PhD to figure out that if you douse an area in poisons, there will be consequences." Well, I would also suggest that it doesn't take a PhD to figure out that if you pack a community like this full of half-baked hippies who take themselves way too seriously, there will be drivel in public.
Yeah, but maybe there is another imperative behind that article. Maybe the marketplace put it in just for its humor value. You know, I think
it is extremely funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is Miss Silverstar real? I mean, it sounds like she's a made-up character.
No, she's been spotted around the community with her penguins.
Oh, fantastic. Has she got live penguins or what?
No, they were in a freezer.
Oh.
Nice. Oh.
Yeah. But anyway,
next to the tofu burgers, presumably.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what her qualifications are in toxins.
I don't know. Does it say that she's got a PhD, or does she say she hasn't got a PhD?
No, apparently it doesn't take a PhD.
Ah, right.
Apparently you don't need one to figure this sort of stuff out. Yeah.
So what do you think, Alex? What is the way of dealing with all these rats then, if it's not going to be Brophyticum and 1080?
Oh, it's an interesting one. there's been so much misinformation about this campaign, and the doc guys, I think, have been sort of trying to deal with it from behind the edge of the debate. They're sort of catching up all the time. But the fact is, doc have been using this particular poison for years and years and years on many islands around the country, in the Marlborough Sounds, all the bird reserves around the place. They should know what they're doing. This collateral damage, inverted commas, that people talk about is still not completely linked to the drop. The pest eradication on Motutapu is a first for DOC, though. It is unusual. It's the biggest area they've tried to eradicate at once, and it's the first time they've tried to eradicate 7 pests at once. So it is unusual in that regard. But the use of this particular poison is not unusual at all. And, you know, people are saying, people who are qualified to comment are saying, the long-term benefits are going to be worth it. The Motutapu thing, it could be as inspiring a, it will be as inspiring a rehabilitation as Tiritiri Maitangi in a few years' time. And Motutapu is 10, 20 times the size of Tiri. So it's really quite a great thing.
But then, wasn't it Ralph Waldo Emerson who said that in nature, there are only consequences?
Only consequences, yeah.
And it's certainly noticeable, particularly the back end of the island, where a lot of the landowners have really aggressively poisoned rats. They've got people running around setting bait traps and so forth. And the drop in the local rat population, you can tell immediately, because when you're driving out the back end of the island, where 10 years ago you might have seen a pheasant and thought, wow, there's a pheasant. Nowadays, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
Eradicate the rats, all of a sudden the pheasant population explodes.
Yeah.
But also, which is fine with me because I enjoy shooting them.
All the other birds explode as well, so that's all good.
Yeah, but pheasants aren't climbing up trees and eating tui eggs, though.
Well,
are they?
No, they're not. They're, that's it. They're not a pest.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see their population come roaring back. And, of course, amazingly, kaka.
Have you seen any? I haven't seen any.
I haven't seen any. No, I did get to see one a few weeks ago down in Wellington. We were at the Karori Reserve,
I did read a letter in one of the papers where someone suggested that the kaka had come here to get away from the Propheticum.
Yes. certainly, if you see a kaka up close, you'll know it. They are magnificent-looking creatures.
Yeah. Now, I've seen them in Vilma Road, yeah. It was last summer. But they do come across from Little Barrier every so often. So if we generated a decent habitat, and the Motutapu thing could generate a habitat for kaka, there's a huge revegetation project on Motutapu as well. So who knows? That could become a forest that would support kaka, and eventually they'd come and live here again. Suits me.
All right. It is incredible the way this country regenerates so quickly. I mean, I saw this a few years ago living down in Hamilton. We lived out on a farm. There was a lot of interesting vegetation around, all of which was being stripped clean by possums. So we started on a possum eradication program. Every Sunday night we'd go out and knock them off. And within months you could see the results. The fantails came back, the trees started growing again, the garden started growing. It really doesn't take this country long. Mm. I think it's one of the first things I really noticed about New Zealand is the way that everything living has got something else living on it. And that stuff's got stuff living on top of that. So it's an amazingly fertile place.
Yeah,
so long as you keep the things like rats and possums out of the way.
Yeah, I think we've got some significant challenges on Waiheke with rats. No possums, of course, but stoats are a real problem here.
Mm.
And I know Andy, the ranger, I think he considers stoats to be the big challenge. Yeah.
Stoats and American celebrities.
Yes. Yes. How will we keep those under control?
Yeah,
will we have to have an eradication program?
What sort of poison would one use?
Okay, we're going to go to a song now, and when we come back, we're going to talk to both Alex and Alan about a couple of new ventures that they're kicking off. So thank you very much to our opinionated islanders, and we will hear from them again in just a moment. So now both of you have got new ventures that are kicking off, and we thought
shameless plug time.
Yeah.
So Alan first. I like the idea of this brewing course. Hey,
yes. Now the idea came because an island resident contacted me and said, "Was I interested in giving a bit of help and support to homebrewers and would be homebrewers on the island?" And I had to admit, well, I hadn't really thought of it, but yeah, sure, why not? It is very difficult to get hold of homebrew stuff here, particularly if you're into the serious stuff involving brewing from scratch. So I thought, all right, I'll put an ad in the paper and see what happens. And I have got a reasonable response. And I will be starting next Tuesday night to run homebrew classes. I'm going for 6 weeks. We'll be covering everything from the basics, basic brewing theory, how to make homebrew kits into something drinkable. And after that, we'll be getting into full-scale grain mash brewing, using all raw ingredients, live yeast cultures, etc., etc. And that'll take the remaining 4 weeks to get through that. And I'm hoping by the end of it, we'll have a group of islanders who will know how to make beer properly.
Well, I know what you will have is a group of islanders prepared to vicariously and willingly participate in testing the results.
In testing the results, yes.
Yeah. I'll put up my hand for that, for sure.
Because particularly given the sort of hysterical pressure that the licensing industry has come under, with pubs being forced to close and all the hysteria over drink driving and stuff, basically they're forcing us back into our own homes. And so if you've got to be forced back into your own home, might as well make some beer.
That sounds good to
me. And do as I've done, put a bar in your living room.
Yeah, well, what it'll do is it'll turn us, give us another angle. We'll be the island of home brewers as well.
That would be nice. I mean, for, you know, coffee roasting, for example, has really taken off on the island. There must be, what, three different companies who are roasting coffee and doing a damn fine job of it.
Incredible job, yeah.
And it'd be quite nice. I mean, we've got Waiheke Brewery doing a fine job.
Yeah.
Of course, Alan's involved with that. And, you know, it'd be nice to have some others and perhaps develop that would be...
Yeah.
Be a wonderful thing for our hospitality industry. It'd be a great signature. Imagine if every restaurant you went to on the island, all you bought was local wine, local beer. Nothing else. You know, like you came to Waiheke and the deal was you got the local to
buy. Well, The problem with the brewing industry is that very often if you set up a licensed premises, the big breweries will come in and they'll offer you money to put the draft system in.
Yeah.
But then you're tied into their products only.
Yeah.
So it takes a rare and courageous pub or bar owner to say, no, we're actually going to do this our way. We'll pay for our own beer lines and we'll put in what we want.
And we have got some around the island who are serving local product. Mm-hmm. Charlie Farley's serving it. Who else has got the Waiheke Brewery on tap?
The new Yum Cha restaurant, Lucky Pig,
mm-hmm.
they've got our beers on tap, which is great. And most people have got the bottles.
Yeah, no, it's all good stuff. I like this idea of local produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but anyways, as far as the brewing course is concerned, I do have a couple more places. I was aiming for 10 people, which is a sort of a manageable number, and I believe I've only got 8 so far. So if anyone is interested, just look the story up in the Gulf News a couple of weeks ago, and please get in touch over the weekend because
what's the number, Alan?
2265.
Yep.
And I'll email you all the details. And you can learn to brew beer like the pros.
Excellent.
It'll be as good as Baruna.
Yeah. Now, Alex, you've also got something new coming up.
No, it's a great, exciting thing. I've been writing in the wind column for the Gulf News for 10 years now, believe it or not. You know, time passes when you see your words in the historical files, you know. But anyway, many people have asked for a collection of the stories, and many people have remarked about a favorite one they remember from way back. So the Gulf News is publishing a collection of In the Wind stories. It'll be about just over 300 pages, paperback, out in mid-November, ready for the perfect Waiheke Christmas present, you know. If people overseas want to know what it's like living on Waiheke or what people think, you could send them the book and you give them a sense of what it's like to...
I hope you've included that wonderful one you did a few years ago about if we could take Waiheke Island off its moorings and put a motor on it and sail it around the world. I thought that was one of your finest.
Yeah, that one's made the edit job, but we've got to edit a bit further to get it down to the 320 pages. But yeah, that one will stay.
Yeah, good. Yeah, don't edit that one out. That was a classic. Well done for keeping it up for 10 years.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, I remember when I was writing the Home on the Rock column for the Marketplace, I think I managed 18 months and ran out of ideas.
No, I never seem to run out of ideas. It's great fun, great fun. But with this book, we're asking people to phone the Gulf News, book their copy in advance, and that'll give us a sense of the print run. Also, it gives us an opportunity to have a big launch party. and we could splash around some of this famous homebrew that's coming around. We'll have appropriate libations at the launch party, shall we say. Yes.
What's it been like reading back over 10 years with the columns, Alex?
Interesting. When we put them together, we just did it chronologically. And as you read it, it becomes like a little bit like the Waiheke version of the shipping news. It's like seeing the place change, how the seasons change, how things change, how some issues come back at you each year in a slightly different form. Like every year, every summertime, there's some issue around visitors and visitor numbers. But each year, there's some slight new angle on it. So there is this sense of time turning, ourselves evolving, but in the end, there's a continuum about it. Yeah, yeah, it's been fun. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, good stuff. Oh, looking forward to reading that. That's in the wind. Live on Waiheke Island for a while. And what's the publication date on it?
It'll be the paperback will be ready in mid-November. So if you're interested, phone the Gulf News, book your copy, and we'll have it to you by mid-November. Give you time to post it to your friends for Christmas.
Good stuff. That's Alex Stone and Alan Knight, our opinionated Islanders. Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, no worries. See ya. I'm off to find Pamela.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, let's go on a Pamela hunt. What sort of ammunition do you think we're going to need to bring her down?
I don't know. How would we recognize her? Because I don't think many blokes are looking at her face.
She has, I believe, a tremendous reputation.
And she has a tattoo somewhere, hasn't she? Somewhere.
Does she?
I don't know.
Look for the red swimsuit, maybe.
Maybe she'll recognize us, you know, celebrities.
Yeah,
maybe
that'll be it.
Celebrities will...
Yeah, she was listening in. She's waiting out there.
All right. We're off.
Okay, thank you. Now, if you're listening in on Sunday night at 9 o'clock, you will have heard over the last month or so, our new comedy curator, Dougal, has the hold of the reins there and has been showcasing some fantastic comedy. And he's with me here this morning. How are you, Dougal?
I'm stoked about Dawn. That's fantastic. I'm blown away by that.
I know. It's going to be a very good show. And, hey, I've been really enjoying the comedy over the last month. You've been selecting some fine pieces there.
Great. Well, we've got something a bit different coming up for October. So we're going to alternate two sort of shows. One is Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue, which is it's like a radio version of Breakfast TV. So the title gives an indication of the type of content that will be covered. So those with sensitive ears may want to tune out for that particular week. But the other week, sort of alternating it with a bit of a classic with Spike Milligan. And his reading of his biography or autobiography. Is that the one where you do it yourself? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of those things. He's reading his book about Adolf Hitler, My Partner's Downfall, which is just hilarious. So the chance to hear Spike in full flow is just phenomenal. So we're going to alternate those. So hopefully there's something for everyone at least one of the weeks during the month, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Good stuff. And, of course, you're going out under the name See You Jimmy.
That's me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Okay.
I'll turn the mic on.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.